Thank you, band. Well, today we're continuing our summer series through the story of Joseph. We're going to be in Genesis chapters 39 and 40 today. Don't know, we're not doing a verse by verse talk of it all, because we will be here for a long time. But last week, if you were here or if you listened back, we saw the kind of the domino effect of sin. We saw how one sin, that was Jacob making Joseph his favorite son, kind of started this whole series of other sins that led to a kind of a proud Joseph, jealous brothers, and a grieving father. The good news is we also found a home for our domino set. I remember I randomly found it in the church, and then someone came up with someone was like, I thought, man, I think they might be ours. So I think I might try and find more random things in the lost property of the church, and I'll gradually get rid of them all over the course of the year. But last week, even though we saw the effect of sin, we were left with hope through two dreams that Joseph had with the same theme. We were left with the hope that God will make sure that one day Joseph's family will bow down before him. But as you left chapter 37 and as you go into chapter 39, it doesn't seem very likely at the moment. So we're going to read a few verses. It is through 39 and 40. I've just picked a few out. But, so I might just jump down a little bit so you can listen or you can try and keep up in your Bibles. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and says, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Then one day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the same prison where Joseph was confined. After they'd been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected, so he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him at his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there's no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the cupbearer told Joseph his dream. "This is what it means," Joseph said to him, "but when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison." The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Who likes fairground rides? Yay! I like fairground rides. I don't like the spinny ones, like the teacups or the waltzers. I like the kind of the up and down ones, like the roller coaster. One of my favorites is one called the Hollywood Tower Hotel. And in it, you kind of sit in it, and then you're kind of taken up slowly in the dark. And then you get to the top, and then you just stay there, not doing very much for what seems like a long time, waiting for something to happen. And then all of a sudden, whoosh, the elevator drops down. You're strapped in, don't worry. It's not a proper elevator either, in case you're listening here. You drop down. And you're down here, but you think your stomach's still up at the top. And then with you've kind of settled a little bit down the bottom, and suddenly it whooshes right back up again. And you're up here, but you think your stomach's been left down at the bottom. It's just so much fun. I love them. And when you continue the story of Joseph in these two chapters of Genesis, it seems like the story kind of happens like that, doesn't it? One minute he's up there, and then the next minute he's down there, and then he can back up. But there's a timeline when it comes to Joseph. He's first mentioned in chapter 37 as a 17-year-old. And by the time you get to the end of chapter 40, he's 28. 11 years as a slave, as a servant, as a prisoner. And he still doesn't know what's going to happen to him. So yes, there are some stomach-churning downs in Joseph's story and ups. But there's also lots of bit where he's just kind of sitting there in the dark, waiting for something to happen. I'd like to ask you a question, children particularly, before I give you your activity packs, but anyone can answer. What do you want to be when you get older? I just look, you always talk, Isaac. That's why I look at you first, because you're guaranteed to say something. Anyone, what did you want to be when you were younger then, before you got older? Has everyone been dead shy? You wanted to be a vet? There you go. Thank you, Debbie. Lily, what do you want to be? Well, you wanted to be a teacher 2 weeks ago at your end of school show. She's changed her mind now, it's summer. Mia, what would you like to be? I'm picking on my own daughters here. You wanted to do what Debbie wanted to do. You wanted to be a vet. I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was younger. And then I wanted to be an optician. Never in a million years did I think I would be here talking to you lot. And I'm sure never in a million years did you think you'd have to be listening to me on a Sunday morning. Do you remember what Joseph was doing when we first met him last week for Who Was Here? What was he doing? Children. Adults can prompt them, it's okay. Remember what he was doing? Nah. It's a little clue. He was, no. Has anyone read the story? Are you all? He was looking after his father's flock, wasn't he? He was being a shepherd. And then 11 years later, at the end of chapter 40, we find him, and he's a prisoner, and he's a servant in a house in a foreign land, and he's got no chance of escaping, it seems like. But what does Joseph do? Does he take the huff? Does he say, I'm just not going to do anything because I'm not where I want to be? Or does he do his very best each day? As far as we can tell, Joseph does his best. And it's a great lesson for us, it's a great lesson for adults, but it's a great lesson for kids too. Whatever situation you're in, do your best for God. Whether what's happening is really good, or whether what's happening is your worst nightmare, like having to tidy your bedroom. Do your best. Why? Because when we do our best and we trust God in every situation, it shows that He's the most important thing to us. It shows the world how much we love God. And it shows that we trust Him, even when things are really, really tricky. I do somewhere, I've lost them now, I did have some colouring sheets. No, don't thank you, you cruel people moving them. So, boys and girls, adults, you can join in as well. Spread out along here, there's some different colouring sheets. I say kind of good, it's a lot easier to share the pens and pencils when you're down the front. You can listen to me at the same time. Grown-ups, you just need to listen to me, I'm afraid. Almost immediately in our passage today in chapter 39, God's introduced. In verse 2, it says, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. In this case, success was gaining status and responsibility in Potiphar's house. In our passage, not only was the Lord with Joseph, but we see what effect that had. Potiphar saw that the Lord was with Joseph. Potiphar realized that Joseph was distinct, that Joseph stood out from other people in his house. Verse 3 says, his master saw that the Lord was with him, that's Joseph, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. This was Potiphar, a man who worshipped the Egyptian gods, saw that Joseph was different, and that difference was the presence of God in his life. What did the presence bring about? Well, no doubt God had gifted Joseph with some administrative skills, but I think more than that, God changed Joseph's character. We see this week a markedly different Joseph than the one we saw last week. And that kind of change in character can only be brought about by the intervention of God. Now, most people wouldn't think much of a blessing being a servant in a foreign land, but we sometimes get mixed up with what we want God to bless us with. We want a secure job, lots of exotic holidays, no stress, no aches and pains, and perhaps some societal status. But God's more interested in our character. Joseph didn't have any of the things that we so desperately think will make us complete. Joseph had gone from being a favorite son and a somebody to being a slave and a servant and a nobody, really. But it seems he also had found a way to have a truer and clearer appreciation of what it was like to have God in your life. How did God change Joseph? Well, the passage doesn't tell us. But a desire to be with God, to know God's character, to read God's word, to pray with God must all have helped. And that must be our ultimate motivation too, for our Bible reading, for our prayer time, for our discussions, for worshipping together like we're doing this morning. They all give us the chance to know God better. Acts 2:42 says, they devoted themselves to teaching, to fellowship, to breaking of bread, and to prayer. That should be us too. And Joseph's attitude in Genesis reminds me of the words that Paul wrote to the servants when he wrote the letter to the Colossians. Paul said, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Joseph developed a godly character. God was with him, and people noticed. The challenge for us is our desire, first and foremost, that the Lord is with us. If so, God will use that to have an impact in the places where we spend our time, at work, with family, where we do our hobbies. But God doesn't do it in an instant, does he? 11 years Joseph's been in so far in Egypt, and that's short when it comes to God's timing. It might take even longer, and that's why the Bible tells us to press on, keep going. Even if you don't notice any change, others will. But it'll take time. Perhaps as an aside, sometimes it might be good for a church when you see a change in someone, one of your fellow church members, when you see God's been working in their life, well, you think it, but think it out loud and say it to them. And just say, I've seen God change this in you. Be encouraged. Press on. And then we can press on together. But it takes time for God to change us, doesn't it? Sometimes life, it's like sitting in the dark at the top of the fairground ride, waiting for something to happen. It's in those moments of waiting that God develops our character as much as he does in the highs and the lows. In our passage today, it seems that Potiphar wasn't the only one who noticed Joseph. Potiphar's wife seems to have developed an interest in him too. She wants to commit adultery with Joseph, but here Joseph shows his love for God and for others. Joseph could probably have slept with Potiphar's wife, and no one would have known. But we see here the effect of the work God has been doing in his life. Joseph doesn't want to betray the trust that Potiphar's placed in him, And Joseph also reveals an important truth concerning all sin, whether we think it affects others or not. Sin is first and foremost against God. In verse 9 he says, "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Psalm 51, David is the same train of thought. "Against you and you only have I sinned," he says. It's not saying that sin doesn't affect others, but it's saying that ultimately the one most affected and hurt by sin is the one that created us in the first place, and that's God. And we don't know for how long Potiphar's wife had pursued Joseph, but verse 10 says she spoke to Joseph day after day. We see the persistence of temptation in this little episode. Temptation isn't a one-off thing. It keeps coming again and again and again. So Joseph flees temptation, and temptation keeps pursuing him. Joseph successfully resists temptation, but another way is found to attack him, and that's through false accusation. The rejected wife claims that Joseph tried to force himself on her. In a moment of irony, another robe causes yet more difficulty for Joseph. But this time, the one that he slipped out of as he escaped, and it's been held accusingly before an innocent man. Did you notice the language used when Joseph was accused? He was no longer Joseph, the trusted servant. He was the Hebrew servant. Dehumanize the man, get rid of his identity and character, and it's a lot easier for accusations to stick, isn't it? And how often do we see that in our society today? You can sling whatever accusations you want at someone, as long as you give them a label and not a name. Don't name them or treat them as individuals, but lump them in with a bunch of others. And it can be, it's done in so many ways. It can be done along political lines. Those conservatives are all like this, or those Labour folk are like this. It can be done along racial lines, those refugees. It can be done along faith lines, those Christians, those Muslims, those atheists. We can do it directly by mouthing the words ourselves, or more often we do it indirectly, perhaps by liking a social media post that we've not paid attention to, or sometimes not stepping in when we hear something that's not right. But Christians are called to be distinct in this world. We're called to be different. We're called to love our neighbors. We're called to love those around us. God calls us to put on, to display compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Everyone saw that the Lord was with Joseph because of his conduct and character. One of the ways that people will see that the Lord is with us is in our conduct and character. Do we label and accuse? Or do we see all as made in the image of God and treat them like so? But for Joseph, the mud's flung. Rightly or wrongly, it sticks. And in the Hollywood Tower experience, that's Joseph's life, he's plummeted right back down to the bottom again. I'm not going to spend long in the last part of chapter 39 and 40, but there are a few things I want us to be aware of and notice. Who's still present? You might know this, you might know the Joseph story inside out, but it's good to hear it every week, isn't it? Who's still present in the up and down and sometimes still existence that has been Joseph's life? Who's always been there? And that's God. Even after Joseph is flung in jail, it still says in verses 21 and 23, the Lord was with him. And you see God walking through the most unlikely of circumstances in this story. You see a glimpse of God's control over Joseph's life. Who's the only person in the whole of Egypt that could get Joseph released from jail? It's probably the king. Whose jail does he end up sitting in? The king's jail. Who does he happen to meet in the king's jail? Two of the king's important officials, which for reasons unknown seem to upset the Pharaoh and have been flung in jail. Coincidence, all these things? You can decide, but not for me. We read that both men had dreamed and were troubled. We read that Joseph, with God's help, is able to interpret the dreams for them. And we'll soon know if God is with Joseph in chapter 40, because interpretations are going to be proved right or wrong in only 3 days' time. It turns out the interpretations of the dreams are correct. If you've read the story, one man lives, one man doesn't. God's right again. But Joseph is forgotten about. This man that's had the Lord with him through all the passage. He knows it. Others have seen it. But the situation's worse now than it was at the start. What now? Well, you'll find out more what happens in the story of Joseph as the next few weeks go on. Steve's going to bring the next chunk to us next week. But today, I think it's important to remember that the Lord being with you doesn't guarantee success as the world measures it. For Joseph, the Lord being with him, if the Lord being with him meant freedom, lots of stuff and no problems, then it's been a big fat fail so far. Who wants that kind of God? You may be feeling that way this morning too. You want the Lord to be with you. But perhaps you feel a bit like Joseph, imprisoned and forgotten. But what if the presence of God with you means something else? Something that can't be measured by human standards? What if being blessed by God is something that can't be taken away? What if the Lord being with you and you being blessed is about being made holy, being set apart for God? What if being blessed is nothing more or nothing less than God's presence in your life? If that's the case, then we, like Joseph, are and can be blessed. We're going to head into a time of communion in a little bit. And I thought we could just think in a couple of points about how we're blessed by God. We are blessed this morning because our spiritual blessings far outweigh any earthly blessings we're going to get. No matter what we receive or don't receive here on earth, we've been given every blessing we need through the complete work of Christ. His righteousness, his resources, his privilege, his position and his power. But like it is for Joseph, spiritual blessings are often walked into our lives through circumstances that most people wouldn't consider to be a blessing at all. We're also blessed because we are redeemed, we're forgiven, and we receive the riches of God's grace. Ephesians says this, in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, in accordance with the riches of God's grace that he lavished on us. The greatest blessing God can bestow on us is helping us see our need for Christ. And then growing in us an increased understanding of who Christ is and what he's doing in our life. Sometimes this is done in situations when earthly blessings are taken away. So as we head into communion in this time of reflection, we remember that Christ made these blessings possible for us. Christ's death and resurrection made us possible the blessing of knowing God more. We have the opportunity to remember and rejoice. Remember the price paid by God for us to be able to know him. And rejoice that when we trust in him, Christ's presence is with us continually. The band are going to come and sing a song for us. I remember to put